And welcome to the Tuesday edition of The Morning Show. This last Tuesday in July, July 28th, I'm your host, Phil Huff. And this morning we have in the studio with us Kaylee Peterson, who's running for Idaho's first congressional district for the United States Congress. We're going to turn to our interview topic today, which is Kaylee Peterson and her bid for Congress. Let's start off by just finding out a little bit more about the candidate. Kaylee, why don't you introduce yourself to the audience?
It's so great to be here. I think my background looks a lot like most working class Idaho women and moms. I've always been incredibly political. I've always been involved in grassroots organizing from the time I was a teenager. I got my start as an advocate and public speaker for diverse students in Idaho's foster and school systems, managed campaigns. But then, like so many Idaho women, when we started our family, I ended up having to make the decision to stay home because we couldn't afford childcare costs. So I stayed home with our kids. I worked nights and weekends. Me and my husband built our life together. But I think I saw what was happening in Idaho's political landscape and wanted to make a change. I wanted to have an impact. So I went back to college, double majored in criminal justice and political science with a goal of getting into public policy. And instead, I was recruited in 2022 to run for Congress. So I think my background is a lot of nonprofit organizing, volunteer organizing, advocacy, and policy, and being able to bring that into this campaign has been fantastic. But the boring stuff that I love the most is my husband Trevor and I have been together 17 years, married 14. I have a 14-year-old daughter and a 9-year-old son. We live down in the North Eagle foothills, so my family homesteaded in that area, and we now all live within a mile of each other on a street that's named after my great-grandfather.
So now I'm going to ask the question we ask of all candidates, and it sounds like the answer is a few generations, but how long have you lived here in Idaho?
Yeah, so my family's been here since the 1880s. I actually have the very original land permit. And it's interesting because I think everybody within a 10-mile radius has some relation to me, whether it's third cousin twice removed or not. But I did have an interesting childhood in that my dad's family is from Connecticut and my mom's family homesteaded in Eagle. So growing up, I actually went back and forth between Connecticut and Idaho. So we joke that I'm one of the few sixth-generation Idahoans that might have a little Long Island accent. But I've been here my whole life. I grew up in those Eagle foothills. I raised my kids in those Eagle foothills. And it's also the privilege of having affordable housing that I'm able to run this campaign as a working class woman.
You've mentioned a few things, but let's go a little bit more into your qualifications for office. Tell us a little bit more about your education, your work experience, other public offices held, if any, and nonprofit groups, service, or professional organizations that you belong to or participated with.
I don't have a long, flashy resume, but I talk a lot about the fact we have 435 people back in Congress, less than 2% of which have a working class background, all of which have Ivy League educations and decades of service as international salesmen, but it hasn't gotten us anywhere because they don't understand what life actually looks like for working class people. My resume may not be as flashy, but the work that I've done behind the scenes, I think, has prepared me to do what Idaho needs right now, which is build coalition, find policy solutions. So like I said, I got my start as a public speaker and advocate for diverse youth and foster and school systems across Idaho. So I worked with social workers, law enforcement, educators, and students on how do we create policy so that every student has the chance to be successful. I then, as a teenager, got into community organizing, volunteering. I worked for a few Ada County Commissioner campaigns before I managed a campaign for a local state representative back in 2008. So I was in charge of all scripts, all volunteers, all door knocking, all public events, all volunteer coordination. And that, I think, is where I learned how much I love organizing, how much I love being on the ground working with people face to face. But like I said, life took a different direction. I became a mom and had different priorities for quite a bit. But even while I was doing that, we worked behind the scenes with different human trafficking organizations, community gardens. When I went back to college at the College of Western Idaho, I created new programs so that agricultural students could get hands-on experience with local nonprofits and refugee community gardens. things. So like I said, a lot of my background is behind the scenes. I went back to the College of Western Idaho. While I was there double majoring in criminal justice and political science, I was also the president of their speech and debate team, 8-time national champions, very proud of them. I have 9 national titles. I think me being a speech and debate kid since I was little has prepared me at least for the policy side of it.
9 national titles. That doesn't mean you were in school 9 years.
No, you must have
had multiple competitions.
That means that at a national tournament, I have 9 titles. Ah. So I have 2 golds, a silver, quarterfinalist, also speech events, so impromptu. Yeah. And yeah, not 9 years.
Why are you running for office now?
In 2022, I saw a Facebook post. I was still in college. I saw this Facebook post that they could not find anyone who was willing to run at the federal level here in Idaho's 1st congressional district. And there's a few reasons for that. It's one of the biggest districts in the country. It is one of the reddest districts in the country. And there is absolutely no financial support. There is no resources and no infrastructure for somebody on the left. And they were just trying to find anyone who's willing to put their name on the ballot. And I said, I can do that. And I raised my hand. I started this race, but I decided that the very least I could do is try. And I started driving up and down the district. And where I think most people saw an insurmountable climb, I saw a massive opportunity because every voter I talked to, whether they were right, left, center, all had the same issues with Congress, all wanted the same things from elected officials. And I realized I loved the work. We found a lot of success in building coalition with people, no matter their party affiliation. And also just trying to create a platform where we could bring other working class candidates who wanted to do good for their community up. And it's the best thing I've ever done because I look at where we are now, 4 years later, and all we've built and the successes and all of these things we've been able to deliver. And this midterm election is a real opportunity for us.
So you ran in 2022, and for most listeners will know, we elect our congressman every 2 years. So, and you ran again in 2024. Why now again in 2026?
We always knew that there was no possible way for a Democrat to run once or even twice and win in Idaho, unless you have $3 to $5 million. If you don't have $3 to $5 million, you have to put in the work. I've driven 107,000 miles across the district 24/7. There is no break from campaigning. So for me in 2022, a lot changed in our district. So people thought our district was red, but we had a massive demographic shift. So after the Dobbs decision, we lost 43% of our OBGYNs. We had a mass exodus of educators, young students, young families, and we became a really attractive place for people looking for incredibly far-right politics. So our demographics got quite a bit worse between 22 and 24. And I'm very, very careful that I've never once made a false promise on this campaign. In 22 and 24, I told everybody, listen, this is big picture. I'm promising you I will commit to this district and till we can get you the representation you deserve. And that's what we've done. And now we're in this place, in this incredibly unique election, where we actually have a pathway to flip the district, where we've built a community that's big enough, where we have support from enough of our trades and organizations. We have the local, state, and federal endorsement of Idaho's Forest Service, National Federation of Federal Employees. We work with firefighters and steelworkers and carpenters and electricians. And I see that all of the work that we've put in has now gotten us to this point where we have a real opportunity to get the kind of representation I think most Idahoans want.
How do you, how do you think our current congressman's doing?
There's one thing that everybody in the state agrees on, and it's that we are severely lacking in leadership back in Congress. Russ Fulcher is probably the most vulnerable of our members of Congress. He's the only member of the delegation that voted against keep public lands in public hands. Actually, he did an interview here in Sandpoint at one point, and he was asked about managing federal lands and the keep public lands in public hands bill. And his response was, I haven't read it. I don't know the details. I think that kind of perfectly sums up the fact that we have an absent congressman who doesn't really understand what's happening on the ground and what life looks like for the majority of his constituents. I have heard him say that Idahoans just don't understand how bad his health care is. Idahoans probably have a better health care system than him, a member of Congress. And I just think it's so out of touch for the lived experience of most Idahoans who are working harder than ever, longer than ever, for less money than ever. They're trying to make ends meet. They're trying to afford health care and their monthly premiums that keep going up. And yet Congress doesn't reflect that at all. And I think you can look at campaign finances and see why. We have members of Congress that are taking hundreds of thousands of dollars from some of the biggest monopolized corporate industries that want to use our labor and our people and our resources and our land. So yeah, I think we can do a lot better.
What would you do differently?
For me, I think my biggest priority has always been trying to make sure that government is only accountable to the people. Because if Congress has its priorities straight, if Congress is actually listening and advocating for voters, then we can get our priorities taken care of, healthcare and land management and education. But right now, members of Congress have every reason not to listen to voters. So for me, holding government accountable is number one. We have worked really hard to build a coalition across the country of working class grassroots candidates who refuse to take corporate PAC money, super PAC money, APAC money, no money from any of those sources. And all of us are working together, committed to the same five pillars of policy, so that when we get elected, we are not just a single freshman in Congress yelling into the void and trying to get things done, but we are ready to introduce legislation day one in committee and actually get these done, which is banning congressional stock trades, term limits, a moratorium on lobbying for members of Congress, an ethics panel for Supreme Court justices, just very rudimentary, basic checkpoints.
So tell us a little bit more about this we or this coalition that you're referring to.
Yeah, so we go by Take Back Congress. And the one thing I've learned is the only way that we're ever going to overcome the amount of money and corruption in politics is through community and through coalition. And what we've done is we are more than 100 grassroots candidates. All of us rely on each other. We have resources. We share advice. But it's also these five pillars that we're all committed to so that no matter what, we know we can get this one thing delivered for the American public and hopefully then the rest. And it has been fantastic. I know a lot of people are concerned. There's so many that don't like establishment politics. But what I love about running as a Democrat in Idaho is the DNC is not paying attention to my race. They don't return my phone calls. They don't return my emails. I get to be my own kind of Democrat. And working with other grassroots candidates, we've created a coalition that I think better reflects what people are looking for from elected officials right now. And we can do things differently.
So this coalition operates outside of the National Democratic Party?
Yes. No connections to establishment politics whatsoever. All of us sign on. We all agree to these holding government accountable policy measures. All of us are grassroots. None of us are connected to the DNC or establishment. It allows us an independence to prove to people that we are doing this differently. But also we're able to create a support system. I think most candidates would believe the DNC is going to step in and invite you in and help you out. And that's just not the reality, at least when you're not raising millions of dollars. We created that support system for ourselves in a way that doesn't jeopardize why we do what we do and our priorities in running.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Let's return to Idaho. So you've mentioned a few policy issues already with the myriad of things out there that folks are concerned about. What are your top three issues and what do you intend to do about them if elected?
I'll say it again. Number one is always going to be just dismantling systems of corruption in Congress. And I think we've gotten so used to what I would call lazy leadership that we look at candidates and they have one issue, one thing that they want to go for. I think that members of Congress should be able to handle all of these issues. I want somebody that can multitask and try and handle different priorities. So looking beyond government corruption and accountability, I think in Idaho, we have to look at federal land management. 62-63% of our lands are federally managed. PILT payments are not working for local communities. How local counties survive without generating enough revenue, how local communities survive, the sportsmen, the industries that work off of our federal lands, it just has an impact on nearly every person I meet. And unfortunately, we have members of Congress that aren't actually actively searching for solutions. It's why I work with our Forest Service. I'm a big believer if you want to learn about something, then work with the people who work with it day in and day out. And I have learned that there are so many opportunities for responsible management. There are incredibly creative recreational uses that have been shown to generate more revenue on federal lands than even the private leases that we're used to doing. We've gutted the federal agencies that protect these lands so that local communities don't lose access and we don't lose our soil and water quality. So yeah, federal lands has got to be at the top. But then healthcare is such a huge issue for every person I meet, whether it's Bonner County General Hospital losing its labor delivery ward, whether it's counties not having a single OBGYN or provider, especially one that's in network, or whether it's the fact that health insurance premiums just jump to thousands of dollars a month for a service that then they're going to delay and deny you coverage as much as possible with deductibles. So healthcare is such a huge issue. I think a lot of us know somebody that's been touched by illness or cancer and then had to deal with the medical bills on top of these battles for your health and for your family. So healthcare, I think, has got to be at the top there. And finally, education. Education, I think, is the solution to so many of the issues that we have, giving our children the opportunity to be successful, to have opportunity, to have consistency and safety. I mean, it's just such an asset to the state, and it's great for attracting local businesses into the state. So, yeah, I think those would have to be the top issues.
Mm-hmm. How would you bring back more doctors to Idaho?
I think the Dobbs decision scared so many local providers. And I hear people talk about what the law says, but what the law says and what it did are two separate things. I have worked with emergency care physicians, maternal fetal specialists, OBGYNs, and there's this consensus that the law has made it nearly impossible for doctors to provide the kind of treatment that they need to treat their patients without fear of retribution or losing their license or even going to jail or frivolous lawsuits. And we're already a rural district, so it was already difficult to find providers who could come into the area. So, yeah, for me, if we want to attract providers, then we need to protect their ability to do their jobs. But also there are ways, tax incentives, subsidies, educational programs that we can use to try and attract doctors back to rural areas. But we have to figure out something because our rural hospitals are struggling just to keep baseline staff right now. So we need the federal government to step in because it's a life or death issue.
Mm-hmm. Your first 100 days, which committee assignments would you seek and how would you approach them?
Russ Fulcher has two incredibly important committee assignments, energy and commerce and natural resources. And those are probably the two most important committee assignments, at least for the people of this state and the issues that they deal with day in and day out. For me, I approach it the way that I've approached this campaign. You know, a lot of people would think that a 36-year-old Democrat who hasn't held office before couldn't be successful in this spot, but I work with local businesses, industries. I work with some of the top industries in the state that we don't talk about it publicly because we don't want to hurt their relationship with sitting members of Congress, but we have managed to build the kind of coalition and to find the kind of policy solutions that are attractive to everybody, to the people in our community, to the businesses in our community, the interests. And committee assignments, I think, are very similar. We need somebody that is willing to step up into a leadership position and bring stakeholders to the table and also make sure that what's happening in Congress, what's happening in committee is is accessible to everyday people. I think the vast majority of working class Idahoans don't have the time or the bandwidth to delve in and get all of this research and to figure out exactly what's happening in committee every day because they're busy working and living their lives and taking care of their family. Now, if I get those committee assignments, then not only do I want to be a leader in that room, but I want to make sure that I'm bringing these issues straight back to the people of Idaho and making it as accessible to them as possible. It's a lot of coalition building and policy solutions if somebody is willing to put in the work. It's a lot more work than just sitting back and waiting for somebody to tell you how to vote.
Excuse me. You've mentioned the Energy and Commerce Committee, which intersects with two really important national topics. I'd like you to talk a little bit more about how you would approach those, and let's take them, I don't know if I want to say in order, but let's take them independently and then tie them together. And one is our economy and inflation. I mean, we are facing some real crises here with in terms of the inflationary trends and our national debt and the general status of our economy. How would you handle that?
It's fascinating because when we look at the national debt and our deficit, so often the first things that people talk about are healthcare and Social Security and all of these. But it is shocking seeing how many federal tax dollars go to some of the largest industries in the world. For instance, I had no idea before I started this campaign that we spend $36 billion annually in direct subsidies just to the fossil fuel industry. But if you include indirect subsidies, that's tax breaks, that number jumps to $760 billion annually in lost revenue for the U.S. government, and yet nobody's talking about it. There's investigations into $80 billion of annual Medicaid fraud through United Healthcare. I mean, there are ways to actually attack wasteful spending at the federal level if we have people who have the right motivations to do so. But it's not just that. Committee hearings found that nearly 54% of inflationary costs are actually corporate profits. And I think we've created a free market system that isn't actually free because the government is already choosing who the winners and losers are. And it's not the American people. It is the most monopolized corporate industries in the world. So I think for me, we need to break up monopolies, bring some competition back into the market, not only for wages, but for costs for the average consumer. I think we have to attack wasteful spending at the federal level. I would, you know, it's funny when I say I used to agree with Doge before Doge actually started doing what Doge did. The idea of Doge is something that I think the American people desperately want. We want somebody who's going to hold government accountable for every penny they spend. We want to know where it's going. Is our defense budget actually going to protect our troops and for military strategic advancement, or is it just going to military contractors and no bid wins? So for our budget and our deficit, I think that there are very quick ways that we can attack it. Mm-hmm. But also, when we bring back the middle class, when everyday families are more successful, that increases the revenue for the federal government. We've seen $56 to $75 trillion go from working class families to the 1% just since the 1970s. Now, that's $56 to $75 trillion that's taxed at a fraction of the rate it would be, and we lose that money. It's gone out of our local economies. It's gone out of our state. So there are ways to attack inflation. There are ways to attack the deficit without attacking essential services, the bare few that people actually have left of what the government is supposed to do for us.
You mentioned defense spending, and that leads us to one of the other really important national topics I'd like you to weigh in on, and that's foreign affairs.
I was really hoping that we were done with conflicts in the Middle East. And I thought when we had this tagline, America First, that at the very least we could count on Congress to focus on America and keep us out of more conflicts. We've been around this. We've done this now 50 years over and over and over again, and not once have we made this situation better. So I also miss the America where diplomacy was the way that we handled this. I mean, we see how this administration has handled Iran. versus how Obama handled Iran. And Obama actually got more concessions. They brought, what was the plutonium number down to 1.3%, which is something that we're struggling just to hold on to. So I want to bring back where America is a global leader in democracy, in freedom, in holding true to our word. I want our European allies to be able to trust that this administration will do what's right, no matter who is president or who is sitting in Congress. I want to keep this country out of unnecessary conflicts. So unless the lives of Idahoans in the 1st Congressional District are under direct threat, then let's keep this nation out of more wars and conflicts. And I mean, we ask where we're going to get money to pay for things. We never seem to ask that question when it's an unnecessary conflict in the Middle East and we can shell out $100 billion. So for me, it's about relationship. It's about trying to bring back diplomacy. It's about figuring out where the common goals are and where we can work with other countries, especially for trade. Idaho's farmers rely on it. It's not just about wars. It's not just about military affairs. It's also about our trade partners and making sure that we have the exports and imports necessary for Idaho farmers. So there's a lot of different ways that this needs to be handled differently. And unfortunately, I don't think we have anybody who's even trying to do it differently.
You've mentioned coalitions you're working with here in campaigning. And on the topic of foreign affairs, the United States has participated and has been a leader in multiple international coalitions, ranging from the United Nations to NATO. Tell us where you see the U.S. role heading in that, if you and your coalition are elected to lead.
I want to bring back, I think, America's place on the global stage. I think we've lost that. For instance, America was the sole no vote on women's equality and rights in the UN recently. We look at what's happening in Israel and Palestine, and we don't see our administration calling out war crimes or calling out injustice. And here's the thing, injustice and corruption are not partisan issues. I want to root out injustice and corruption, whether it's on the left, whether it's on the right, whether it's in Israel, whether it's... And that's how we regain our footing on the global stage. But if we're not willing to call out injustice when it is so plain for the world to see, then we are never going to be a leader again, whether it's in the UN or whether it's in NATO. I want to bring back those strong relationships. But unfortunately, we need a Congress that is willing to push the administration to do what is right and willing to at least hold true to those promises. If our European allies, if our NATO allies, if our UN allies realize that in 4 years, a contract could be ripped up and promises could be broken, then they're not likely to go into more deals with us. And we have to figure out how to reframe that trust and do things differently enough that we can start building those relationships back.
Mm-hmm. Another really topic that's in the news a lot, immigration policy. How again, would you, as part of Congress, bring back Congress's role in that?
I think there is a false dichotomy going on right now where you're either pro-ICE and pro what is happening, or you are pro-open borders and violent criminals. And that couldn't be further from the truth. And North Idaho understands this better than most because of what this administration has done with immigration, with tourism. Tourism at our northern border is down 17 to 25%. Local businesses that survived on that tourism are now struggling to make ends meet because this administration isn't doing what's best for the immigration system. It's trying to look tough. And unfortunately, what happened is DHS and ICE have completely destroyed any trust that local communities had. We have a federal paramilitary police force masked that is grabbing people off the streets without warrants, that is indefinitely detaining legal residents, legal immigrants, veterans, people, our neighbors. This happened in my district. It happened down in Wilder, Idaho. And you had 12, 13-year-old children being zip-tied for no other reason than they looked like they could potentially be an immigrant. And what's more frustrating is that we had legislation that would have actually addressed real problems in our immigration system. There was the Farm Workforce Modernization Act, and it would have streamlined immigration visas for migrant workers, especially during seasons. So there were solutions that were on the table, but instead we are funneling billions and trillions of dollars into a system that has completely destroyed any trust the American public had in the Department of Homeland Security and in this. So for me, it's really simple. I think we have to start from scratch. I think we have to reimagine immigration. I think we break up ICE. I think we invest in immigration judges, attorneys, the system. I think we work with Mexico to invest in newer technologies to avoid issues at the southern border. There were ways to invest smartly that actually increases public's trust in these law enforcement agencies. But right now, there's so much fear that there's no way ICE can do the job that they need to do and do it well because of what's happened. Mm-hmm. Over 60 people have died in detention, over 60, and not a single ICE agent has lost their life in the line of duty. And I think that says a lot.
We're coming close to the end of the interview. Are there other topics you'd like to talk about we haven't touched on? Other issues?
I think it's the easiest way to frame my campaign is we're starting from scratch. We're doing things differently. I think so many people have an idea of what a Democrat is. We're doing that differently. So many people have an idea of what a congressional campaign looks like. We're doing that differently. And it means that it's taken longer than most campaigns, but we've put in the work and we are actually trying to give everyday working class people mm-hmm. a real voice. And we're trying to make it fun. That's why I'm mm-hmm. here in Sandpoint. We're having launch parties and events all across the state from pubs and bakeries and Wallace, because we want it to feel like something a young family could attend mm-hmm. or a tradesman could attend. Anybody could show up and feel like they were part of a community, learn about what's going on, and be a part of the solution. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it's working class issues. And if I don't define it left, right, or center, I don't define it as conservative or progressive. I define it by who does this policy help? And it's working class people. I'm a labor first, union first candidate through and through.
Pulling it all together, why should someone vote for you?
I think that I've done the work to prove that we're doing this differently. If you check my FEC reports, you can see where every penny came from and where every penny goes. If you look at the people that I work with across the state, I have been here in Sandpoint dozens of times doing the work and trying to build coalition. I have people that give money to my campaign that are still to this day Trump supporters because we focus on the policy and we are trying to undo the harm that this divisive rhetoric has caused in the way that we have split our communities down the line by these party affiliations. So if people want something different, if they want somebody that can absolutely go back to D.C. and hold corrupt politicians accountable, I know I can do it because I've been doing it here in Idaho. Yeah, yeah. If they want somebody that is willing to actually put in the work and reframe an American system of excellence that I think all of us miss, then I hope that they will come and be a part of the campaign. But also because we have a great community of people and we have a lot of fun doing the work that we do. It's really easy to have fun when you're not corrupt and you're not making people's lives worse.
Well, before we close, how can people find out more?
Luckily, I'm the only Kaylee running for Congress in all of America.
There you go.
I am very easy to find. I'm on all social media. It's just K-A-Y-L-E-E for Congress, all spelled out. Our website has all of our events. We have dozens of events coming up in the next few weeks across Northern Idaho. We are super accessible. So if they go to my website, they can find my policies, platforms, or donate if they're interested. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you for coming in this morning, Kaylee. If